Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives. Episode 36, Taken Ill.
Statement of Nicole Baxter regarding visits culminating in the fire that consumed Ivy Meadows care home in Woodley, Greater Manchester. Original statement given November 19th, 2012. Audio recording by Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, London. Statement begins. Fear is a strange thing, isn't it? What you're afraid of. For most people, a corpse is at the least unnerving and for some outright terrifying. Or maybe it's disgust. They are two very different feelings, aren't they? Though they often bleed into each other, if you'll pardon the pun. I work as a funeral director, so as you can imagine, how I feel about death and the body is a bit more complicated and more immediately relevant than it is for most people. Dealing with cadavers day in, day out forces you to confront all manner of things about yourself. Simply put, I have found that I do not believe in any sort of afterlife. I have seen people cold and lifeless upon the mortician's table who I knew, who I remembered as vibrant and lively. There was no soul that had departed, no special spark that passed on to something else, simply a body that no longer moved or spoke or thought. It feels odd to consider the fact that you will no longer exist someday. But you didn't exist for billions of years before your birth, so it doesn't seem unreasonable to conclude that you will not exist afterwards in much the same way. I try to see life as a pleasant holiday from non-existence. It provides some comfort when the truth of my own mortality stares me in the face every day. There is one thing about dead bodies that does bother me, though. One thing that eats at me, as it were, and does give me that sick tightness of fear deep in my gut. It is rot. I don't know why it gets to me so. Perhaps it's precisely because I don't think there is anything beyond the body, and even dead and unaware, seeing a person's form begin to putrefy and fester, becoming just a home for the crawling, feasting things, is too much for me. Perhaps it's just an unaccountable phobia. Regardless of the reason, the fact is that to see the corpses decaying, to see their flesh corrupted, it is the one part of this job that I find uncomfortable. So much so that I would describe reconstruction and preservation as my favourite part of the process, making sure the cadaver looks as peaceful and lifelike as possible. Make them the person they were, or as close as they can be while cold and senseless. Fighting off the rot, the insects, the disease. I don't know why I wrote disease just then. They're dead, so they can't be diseased in the normal sense, can they? I suppose it's just thinking about what happened at the Ivy Meadows care home links them in my head. But it's not just that, is it? That the fear, the feeling, that tingling, squirming fear at the back of my mind, it feels the same when thinking of the germs that corrupt and twist our bodies, lurking invisibly on any table or surface, or when I saw those swarming flies. How many more moved and buzzed just out of sight? I've never had any mental health issues before, but perhaps after my experience I should consult someone. I read once that OCD can come on later in life if a severe experience sets it off. I'm rambling. Disregard this first page, I'll start again. I work as a mortician at Baxter and Gordon Funeral Directors in Woodley. By rights, it should now just be Baxter Funeral Directors, as William Gordon passed away himself about 5 years ago, leaving my Uncle George running the place on his own. He kept the name, though, as he always said it was one of the most respected in all of Manchester. God knows there was no sentimental reason to keep it. From the way he talked, he and William Gordon hated each other by the end, to the point where the will expressly stated that the body of William Gordon was to be handled and prepared by Fenchurch and Sons, one of my uncle's great rivals. Maybe that's why Uncle George is so keen to keep it in the family. He hired me and my cousin Josh to help, and now Baxter and Gordon Funeral Directors is entirely run by Baxters. I've been there for almost 4 years now and have taken over most of the client-side arrangements of the business. My uncle has gotten somewhat brusque in his old age and is now more suited to organizing things with churches and crematoria rather than handling the recently bereaved. As such, I've gotten to know the various nursing and care homes around Woodley rather well. We generally get a few removals from any given one each year. Maybe as many as a half dozen if the winter is bad. It's certainly our most reliable source of business. Of them all, Ivy Meadows was my favourite. For a funeral director to say she has a favourite nursing home probably sounds a bit like the Grim Reaper talking about his favourite hospital, but it's true. Ivy Meadows care home was on the outskirts of Woodley, where the suburbs gave way to pockets of green countryside. It wasn't remote, exactly, but it was removed enough from the main road that it stood alone, surrounded by rather lovely gardens on three sides and a long, open field behind it. It had been a country house once, I believe, but not much of the original structure remains, having been modified and expanded to provide accessible accommodation for about 30 residents. It was an odd building, with modern glass and concrete sections sprouting from old turreted brickwork, like blocky stone tumours. The look of the place wasn't why I liked it, though. No, that was the residence. Ivy Meadows was almost entirely populated by those elderly who were entirely supported by the state. Most pensioners have some savings or property or family to support them, which means if they're unable to live alone, they can at least afford to pay for their own care, or some of it. It's rare for a person to reach that age and have literally nothing to pay for their care, but it does happen. In these cases, the state pays for them, but they have little choice in where they end up. Ivy Meadows was almost entirely populated by these. Old people without money or family sent to be looked after by strangers. You'd have expected the atmosphere to be unpleasant, some morbid combination of prison and hospice, but it was quite the opposite. Something about the mutual loneliness seemed to lead them to create a real sense of community. It was the only place I ever went where the residents still gave me a smile. Hannah Ramirez, who ran the place, would always tell me a bit about the deceased and their time there, and I was inevitably shocked by tales of drugs, sexual escapades, and other gossip that sounded more like a high school than a nursing home. I think Hannah enjoyed trying to get a reaction out of me when I was trying to be solemn. It was just a happy place, even if I was only there to do a sad duty. It all started to change about 3 months ago, after Hannah left. I don't know exactly when she left her post or why. We hadn't had a call from Ivy Meadows for a couple of months, so it must have happened during that period. I don't know where she moved to either. It certainly wasn't any of the other care homes around Woodley, and it wasn't like I knew her personally. I'd gotten a call from one of the nurses, Alenka Kozel, who said that one of their residents had taken ill and passed away. A man by the name of Bertrand Miller. I asked her for a few more details. She started to say something else, but the call was cut off almost abruptly. I didn't really think too much about it. Most of the details could be worked out when we arrived, so I called Josh and loaded up the car for a removal. It was a hot, mid-August day, and the air was thick and humid, making everything feel sticky, like the whole world was running a fever. The sky was overcast, though, an orangey-grey that cast muted shadows and seemed to muffle the world. It was about a 10-minute drive to Ivy Meadows, and neither of us said a word. I don't know why. At that point, we had no idea that there was anything wrong, but looking back, it seems like we both felt there was something off about it. Or maybe we were just too hot for conversation, and hindsight is colouring my memories. When we arrived, the place was silent. There were no cars in the parking area, which was not unusual. but I couldn't see a soul anywhere on the grounds. Maybe they were simply staying out of the heat. Josh and I got out of the car and approached the door. I pressed the buzzer, as I had done so many times before, expecting the cheery voice of one of the receptionists. Instead, there was just dead air, followed by the clunk of the door being remotely unlocked. I looked at Josh, who shrugged, and we went inside. Ivy Meadows Care Home was usually much as you would find any other. Air-conditioned and smelling faintly of cleaning products and cheap potpourri. This time it was different. The smell now was just as faint, but seemed rancid, while the air itself was close and damp. The beige walls seemed dirtier than before, with dark marks at roughly hand height. There was a faint buzzing like a fly, but I couldn't see any source for it. None of it was so bad as to make us turn back, however, and we headed towards the reception desk. There was nobody behind it, and I rang the bell. I always wore gloves when on a removal, and was glad of that fact now as I noticed a greasy residue on top of the small brass bell. The door to the reception opened, and a tall man stepped out. He was rail thin and wore a faded brown suit that seemed to have been cut for a much fatter man. His eyes were a watery blue, and his dark hair stood on the top of his head in an unruly mess. He must have been around 40, but had a nervous sort of energy to him. He was quite a surprise, to say the least. Josh recovered faster than I did and asked the man, a bit rudely, who he was, where we could find Hannah. The man shook his head at this and said that Ms. Ramirez had left the position and he was now director of Ivy Meadows. He introduced himself as John Amherst and held a hand out for Josh to shake. My cousin stood there for some time, staring at the thick, sweaty hand of this strange man, clearly not wanting to shake it. Mr. Amherst just stood there, arm outstretched, apparently unconcerned. A fly landed on his face, and if he noticed, he didn't give any sign of it, not even when it walked across his eye. Eventually, the now clearly shaken Josh stuttered out some semi-polite excuse and backed away. At this, John Amherst lowered his hand and turned to me. He asked why we were here. This took me rather by surprise, as there's generally only one reason undertakers show up in such a place. We told him we had received a call and been told Mr. Miller had passed away.